So today we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita because it's a special day, special commemoration. Today is the disappearance day of Srila Sanatana Goswami and also the occasion of Guru Purnima. So the two are very much connected. And so today I chose this verse from the CC, Madhya Leela, which is one of the key verses spoken by Srila Sanatana Goswami. Is a very important verse, which probably most people know, but it is essentially the start of spiritual inquiry. So we'll recite this, and then a few verses around this. This is from the Madhya Leela, chapter 20. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Who am I? Why do the threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? Purport. The threefold miseries, the threefold material miseries, are miseries arising from the body and the mind, miseries arising from dealings with other living entities, and miseries arising from natural disturbances. Sometimes we suffer bodily when we are attacked by a fever, and sometimes we suffer mentally when a close relative dies. Other living entities also cause us misery. There are living entities born of the human embryo, of eggs, perspiration, and vegetation. Miserable conditions brought about by natural catastrophes are controlled by the higher demigods. There may be severe cold or thunderbolts, or a person may be haunted by ghosts. These threefold miseries are always before us, and they entrap us in a dangerous situation. Padam padam yat vi padam. Natesham. There is danger in every step of life. Srila Prabhupada ki. So this was the opening inquiry of Sanatana Goswami to Lord Chaitanya. Just after he has explained his own disqualifications. When he had the opportunity to meet Lord Chaitanya, he said, I was born in a low family, and my associates are all low-class men. I myself am fallen and am the lowest of men. Indeed, I have passed my whole life fallen in the well of sinful materialism. I do not know what is beneficial for me and what is detrimental. Nonetheless, in ordinary dealings, people consider me a learned scholar. And I am also thinking of myself as such. So this was the state that Sanatana Goswami was in before he started his series of questions. And the first of those questions was regarding his duty. He said, out of your causeless mercy, you have delivered me from the materialistic path. Now, by the same causeless mercy, please tell me what my duty is. Then today's verse, who am I? Why do the threefold miseries always give me trouble? If I do not know this, how can I be benefited? Actually, I do not know how to inquire about the goal of life and the process for obtaining it. Being merciful upon me, please explain all these truths. So this was the inquiry of Sanatana Goswami when he finally had the chance to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this meeting happened in Benares, Varanasi. And initially, Lord Chaitanya had given his darshan to Sanatana and Rupa Goswamis when he travelled to Ramakeli. And in Ramakeli, which was in Bengal, the brothers were living, Rupa and Sanatana, and they were ministers in the court of the King Nawab Hussein Shah. And these two brothers were given very high positions. The Nawab Hussein Shah wasn't always entirely friendly or supportive of Hindu culture, being a Mohammedan himself. But he had appointed these two brothers, who are actually very exalted Brahmanas by birth. And he had appointed them to top positions in his government, because they were exceptionally qualified. So one was the finance minister, the other was the prime minister. And they essentially ran the kingdom. They essentially ran all the important, they conducted the important dealings, they dealt with all the different issues, they managed everything, leaving the Pathan to get on with his business of conquering and conquests. So that's an interesting scenario, how it is that these two persons end up essentially serving in the court of someone who's a meat-eater, a malecha. So many descriptions could be given, averse to Vedic culture. But that's perhaps a different discussion. These two brothers acted to help the situation by their behavior and their absorption in spiritual matters. They were both very, very exalted, but very attached to the Vedas, especially Srimad Bhagavatam. And there are various pastimes, especially in Sanatana Goswami's youth, where he was presented the Bhagavatam or encouraged to read it by Krishna himself in a vision or a dream. And he took initiation as a child from Vidya Vachaspati, who's a son or disciple of Tapan Mishra, another exalted devotee. And so Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami had in the back of their minds, and as we see transpiring right in the front of their activities, the nature of devotional service to Krishna, above and beyond their standard day job. They were doing this employment in the court of the king as a job, essentially. But it wasn't their attraction. In Ramkeli, because they were so well accepted, appreciated by their king, he had given them essentially an unlimited blank check, unlimited access to his treasury. And they had constructed large palaces in Ramkeli for use by the different ministers and themselves. And so such was their focus that they actually even constructed a replica of Vrindavan in their home in Ramkeli. They created different places of the pleasure pastimes of Krishna. And this was how they spent their days. They would invite the sadhus, they would discuss Srimad Bhagavatam, they would teach people, and they would also carry on their day job. Almost the same as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a magistrate in the court, so he had his daily activities, but his entire life was dedicated to writing, chanting, preaching about Krishna. So these two brothers had the first chance to meet Lord Chaitanya when he came to Ramkeli. And this was after they had written letters to him, begging him for his mercy, begging him for them to be released from their situation. So Lord Chaitanya had come and they had approached him in all humility in the middle of the night. Now why the middle of the night? Because devotees don't like to make a scene of their devotion and their surrender. So in the middle of the night, when no one was around, they went to see Lord Chaitanya, fell before his feet, and surrendered to him. Now, we have to understand who these two persons are before we can appreciate the extent of their surrender. In one sense, they had everything that every single person aspires for in modern life, even in traditional life, the standard things, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Those four things are aspired for by more advanced persons. But at least the artha part, the wealth part, wealth and enjoyment, those are desired by almost everyone in this world. Sense enjoyment, the acquisition of wealth, name, fame, distinction, the power to control. Essentially, each one of the opulences that Krishna possesses as Bhagavan, each of the six opulences, is desired by someone or other in this world. And according to the nature that each person has, through the different modes that they have acquired, they're attracted by one or more of these. But certainly wealth is something that is universally appreciated. Lakshmi Devi herself, people like to control the goddess of fortune. They like to have as much Lakshmi as possible so they can engage Lakshmi in the way that they would like. So if we look at it from the brother's point of view, they had all of that. They were born in exalted families. They had everything, Janma Aishwarya Shruta Shri. They had plenty of wealth. They had ministers at their beck and call. They just had to snap their fingers and whatever they wanted would get done. Yet at a certain point, they have decided that enough is enough. They've decided that I've nothing further to gain from this pursuit. It's one of the greatest illusions in life that when a person has a certain quantity of something, that they think they need a little more. A pauper who has nothing desires a few coins, maybe a few items to eat. Once the pauper has a few items, then he may want more, a larger bank account. Then what happens is with the larger bank account, the lifestyle also changes. The lifestyle becomes more extravagant. And then the needs increase. Before, a person managed with very, very little and had very little concerns. And now that the person's opulence has grown, they have so many things to maintain and so many things to be afraid of. So fear is also something that comes naturally when one has a great deal. The consequence of that fear is one struggles more and more and more to keep increasing the defenses. If you have a lot of money in the bank, you might be afraid that this will happen to me, that will happen to me, and then I'll lose it all. Or if I haven't quite done my taxes correctly, the tax man's going to come and he's going to take everything. So then people start doing more creative things. Whereas before the person was happy with their one bank account, maybe a little cash in the pocket, now they have to start spreading their wealth around the world just to avoid the tax man. Then that leads to all sorts of other problems. Because it's not in all countries that your wealth will remain protected. At least in this country, wealth is kind of guaranteed by the government. Although the legalized thieves are there to remove it in the form of taxes. So in other countries, that may not be there necessarily. Taxes may not be levied, but you may have other persons to deal with who will take it by non-taxable means. So the troubles just increase. And the larger the empire, the bigger the trouble. So never has there been a situation where someone has acquired, succeeded in spiritual life and come to a point where they thought, now I am happy. I can just enjoy. It simply doesn't happen. So these two brothers were at this point. They, on the other hand, had this strong sense and background of devotional service and attachment to Krishna. So through the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, they could very clearly see that this is going nowhere and that I need to take steps which will address my real needs. And therefore they started to approach Lord Chaitanya. They heard of his greatness, his glories through other devotees, and they approached him and they inquired from him. And this inquiry is really the start of any sincere practitioner's progress. They had to undergo a great deal of trouble. Every person who's come to Krishna consciousness has had to go through trouble. For some, it may be very easy. The parents may have directly encouraged you, especially if you're born in a devotee family. But then often we find when the parents encourage the children to become devotees, the children themselves aren't particularly interested. So there's still a conflict. On the other hand, if a person surrenders to Krishna, and everyone is against it, from the family side, from the relatives, from the friends, then that becomes a challenge. And in the case of these two brothers, it was a big challenge. Because at a certain point, they told the king, we can no longer support your activities. The king was planning to invade Puri. And they said, we just can't do this. It's bad enough that we are complicit in all your heinous activities through our service to you. But this is one step too far. You are going to Puri to give pain to Jagannath. How can we possibly serve you? So on the pretense of being sick, they didn't turn up to work. So this is the original sickie, if you like. It started back then. Now, of course, they were feeling that they were genuinely sick. Because being materially engrossed is a type of sickness. It is the sickness. And so they weren't lying.
unlike most people who are off to do some item of sense gratification when they throw the sikhi. These two persons were after Krishna. Well, anyway, the king sent his ministers around to see what was actually happening. And he found them in their homes, surrounded by lots of brahmanas, reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so the king was very upset about this. He said, "You're not sick. I sent these people to check what's wrong with you, and you're happy as can be." And so he put Sanatana Goswami in prison. That was his service. He put him in prison because he couldn't have other members of his royal court behaving like this. And he had to make a lesson of him. So he put him in prison. Rupa Goswami had escaped before. He'd started traveling. And Sanatana Goswami was in jail. And he was wondering, how can I get out of this dreadful situation? Well, Rupa Goswami helped him. He had kept some money, deposited some money from his previous earnings, etc. And he wrote a cryptic letter to Sanatana Goswami advising him to leave and advising him to go to Vrindavan. So Sanatana Goswami went through this whole adventure where he had to bribe the gatekeeper, the prison keeper, with different gold coins, tell him he was going on pilgrimage. And in this way, he somehow left. And then he started traveling. He traveled, he had various adventures on the way. There's one famous adventure where he was traveling with his servant Ishan, and they stayed at this innkeeper's place. But this innkeeper was a crafty individual, and he had this astrologer who would analyze the different guests who would come. And this astrologer had informed the innkeeper that, this Sanatana Goswami has with him in his party, he has 8 gold coins. So this innkeeper decided, I will kill him. Quite ruthless, really. Nothing diplomatic about it. He said, I will kill him. And this was his plan. He was planning to kill Sanatana Goswami in the middle of the night and take all his money. Now, Sanatana Goswami could detect something is going on. And he could also see that this innkeeper was just waiting for this moment. And in order that he wouldn't be suspected, he was serving him very nicely, offering him all facilities, offering him nice items to prepare for food. And Sanatana Goswami was quite smart. He knew from his governmental dealings that too much devotion is the sign of a thief. So he thought, this person wants something. He wouldn't be serving me so nicely unless he's going to do something. So he turned to Ishan and he said, Ishan, have you carried any money with you? Have you got anything with you? And he said, yes, I've got 7 gold coins. So he said, give them to me immediately. And he took those coins, went to the innkeeper, and said to the innkeeper, look, I've got these 7 gold coins with me. It is better you take them. Just help me to cross this land into the next state, etc. And the innkeeper said, actually, I can see you are a great soul, because it was my plan to actually kill you and take these coins anyway. But having seen your greatness and your magnanimity, I don't want these coins. You keep them, and I'll help you cross through this land very safely. Sanatana Goswami said something very interesting. He said, it is far better that you take them. Because if you don't take them, someone else will kill me and take them. So better you relieve me of this burden so that I do not have to go through this difficulty in the future. Well, if you've been following the numbers, there's still 1 gold coin unaccounted for. So Sanatana Goswami said to Ishan, did you carry anything else with you? And he said, yes, I've got 1 gold coin. And he said to him, okay, you take this gold coin and go back home. I'll proceed on my own. It is actually safer for me to be without assistants who will actually put my life in peril. So many sannyasis also experience this when they're traveling around the world. Sometimes it's more austerity for them to take a servant, because when they go to a different place, the servant from country X can't do anything in country Y anyway. And it often causes more trouble for them, because they then have to end up looking after this person. So some sannyasis sometimes just prefer to travel alone. And that is the actual meaning of the original sannyas. That one travels without taking any assistance or having any social connections. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki. Now, of course, Sanatana Goswami wasn't an official sannyasi, but essentially this was the start of his life as a mendicant, a transition from a life of great opulence to the life of a mendicant. And anyway, he traveled, he went to Varanasi, and there he met Lord Chaitanya. And that meeting is very famous, where Sanatana Goswami, who had long hair, he was unkempt, dirty through traveling, austerities, his employment, had reached there, and he humbly found out the place where Lord Chaitanya was staying, the house of Chandrasekhar, and he went there and just waited outside. And Lord Chaitanya said, "There is some great individual outside, please bring him in." So the servant went to get him, and he said, he looked around, he said, went back and said, "There wasn't any great individual out there, Lord Chaitanya." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Who was there? Was there anyone at all?" He said, "Yes, there was just this traveling Muslim mendicant." And he went out and said, "Yes, yes, that's him, bring him in." So he came in, and Lord Chaitanya embraced him. Others were wondering, who is this person? He's dirty, he's unclean, he's not shaved. And Lord Chaitanya embraced him, and they had a wonderful discussion. And then the discussions continued. And then for the next 2 months in that place, Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami in the actual science and Siddhanta of Krishna consciousness, all starting from this initial inquiry, "Who am I?" Now, in one place, Srila Prabhupada translates this "Ke ami," "Who am I?" as "What am I?" So I find this always a very interesting perspective to take on the subject. Sanatana Goswami is also known as the Sambandha Acharya. So he's the Acharya who allows us to be established in our position of connection with Krishna. Most people wandering around in this world are wandering as little independent entities with their minds, intelligence, false egos, and their body. And they think, "That is me." So they wander around, but every so often someone starts to inquire, exactly who am I? Or even more fundamental than that, what am I? Am I this body? Well, if you analyze it, the body is really a machine. It's a machine. The doctors know how much of a machine it is. And we also see that. This breaks, we go and have it repaired. It's just like a machine. We don't attribute consciousness to the body. So that clearly is not us. If you want to analyze the makeup, that's not us. So what else can it be? Okay, most people think it's the mind. For most people, that is actually who they are. In Krishna consciousness, we say, "I am spirit soul." But actually, most of us are not exactly spirit souls. Although we are, in terms of nature and in terms of fundamentals, we are spirit soul. Most of us are wandering little packages of spirit soul covered by this entire layer of mind, intelligence, and false ego. And our identity is mostly in the mind. In the covered state, the natural nature of the soul is hardly allowed to be exhibited. Hardly. And the greater the covering, the more in illusion one acts. So they say and they do things and they behave in ways which are nothing at all to do with the soul's desires. And that is how a person conducts their life, thinking in terms of I, me, and mine, when the actual real I is something else altogether. So it's always very useful to analyze, what is it? What is the component? What is our makeup? And the Gita explains that there are 8 elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, etc. These constitute the material energy. That material energy is what gives us this body. Then the Gita explains that superior to these, there is something else. Aparayam itasvanyam prakritim vidyame param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam dhariyate jagat. That jiva bhuta, higher than these, is the jiva bhuta, the soul, the subtle, the spiritual. Something that is transcendental to this material nature, and which this and that soul uses this material nature to enjoy and exploit, is the specific word. So the superior energy uses the inferior energy. And Krishna explains after that actually the living entity has its origin in both of these natures. It has its spiritual nature, that is its essence, his essence, her essence, that is the essence. But we still have this other nature, which comes from the material nature. That is our subtle body, which is governed by the modes specifically. And according to each person's situation in the modes, they exhibit a different behavior. So when you have that kind of analysis, which is precisely the analysis that Lord Chaitanya goes into, that is what constitutes a clear definition and distinction between matter and spirit. And that is really the essential start of spiritual inquiry. There are so many things that people inquire about, most of them useless. Who won the cricket? Who won the tennis? Who won the football? Who's playing who? It's a topic of much excitement over the last week. Ultimately, none of these help one to be situated in their natural constitutional position of loving devotional service to Sri Krishna. So there is a characteristic of questions. There is a caliber of questions which leads to upliftment, and a caliber of questions which doesn't. So in one sense, spiritual life is all about asking, not so much extracting answer after answer after answer. It is about knowing which question to ask. This is really what distinguishes someone who takes to spiritual life and moves forward from someone who doesn't. When we ask the right question, we ask the question that will actually allow us to progress internally and wholly and fully. So rather than questions regarding temporary external dealings, we ask questions of this type. Who am I? What should I do? Why am I constantly harassed by the threefold miseries? I am so unqualified. What should I do? These are actually useful questions. So this questioning is the characteristic of the soul, ultimately. Athato Brahma Jignasa, this is a characteristic exhibited in human life specifically. The soul naturally wants to be connected to Krishna and is always trying somehow to be connected to Krishna. Always trying to be connected to Krishna, even in the conditioned state. How does it happen in the conditioned state? Normally we say the conditioned state is one where you're separate from Krishna. But in the conditioned state, how do we try to connect to Krishna? To remember him? Well, the conditioned soul isn't always doing that. How does a fully conditioned living entity try to connect to Krishna? Yes? Yes, well, your answers are all on the platform of an advanced conditioned soul. I'm thinking of someone much lower than that. Okay, fine. So he's looking for happiness, looking for love, but what's the method by which he connects to Krishna? Okay, that's from the transcendental category. He's trying to... Yes? Yes. He's trying to get Krishna through the only means he knows, which is matter, which is enjoyment. Matter itself is a production of Krishna. And the material world is also perfect and complete. And Krishna always remains the reservoir of pleasure, even for those in the material world. He is the reservoir of pleasure. Whatever great thing there is, whatever attractive item there is, as Krishna says in the Gita, it is all a spark of my splendor. Whatever desirable item there is in this world is a spark of my splendor. So a conditioned person desires to enjoy something, doesn't realize it is Krishna. But they still want Krishna. They just don't know. So they turn to matter. They turn to material avenues, material means for deriving that enjoyment. So a devotee, as the transcendentalists have explained, a devotee uses their conditioned state and uses the processes of pure spiritual bhakti to rise out of that. And then the person moves on and makes progress. So Sanatana Goswami acts as the Sambandha Acharya who brings us an understanding of our actual position. If we are forever thinking, I am this body, or at most, I am the brain, then our activities and decisions in life are based simply on that limited conception. If we understand that I am the soul, and that my capability is quite distinct from what is offered by this body, then the types of inquiries we make are also different. So this is why this sambandha, this establishment of relationship, is the fundamental step in advancing in Krishna consciousness. Now, Sanatana Goswami's own behavior is very exalted. He, in Vrindavan, he went, after he was instructed in Varanasi by Lord Chaitanya, he was given some missions by the Lord. He was asked to do four things, both him and Rupa Goswami. There are four tasks that they were given after 2 months of personal direct discourse. Those four tasks were, one was to write books. One was to uncover the holy places in Vrindavan. Another one was to establish the worship of the deity. And the fourth one, teach Vaishnav culture. Very, very important aspect to practically teach this culture of bhakti to others. Very important that even with the greatest shastras, if one doesn't know the culture, if one doesn't know how to explain it to people, one can get completely the wrong result. So he was told to go to Vrindavan, and he spent some time there, engaged in deep bhajan. He founded the Madan Mohan temple there. Madan Mohan, the deity who attracts people's minds. Madan Mohan Mohini, isn't it? The one who attracts Cupid even. That is Krishna, one of his definitions, his titles. So the Madan Mohan deity is designed with great beauty and great potency to attract the conditioned living entities away from Maya and to Krishna. And therefore we call that the Sambandha deity. Because this is establishing the living entity in his constitutional position of having a loving relationship with Krishna. This is such an important contribution. Rupa Goswami we know is the Abhideya Acharya. We have Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan. Sambandha means connection. Abhideya means practice. And Prayojan means the goal, the conclusion, the result of all of that practice based upon a correct sambandha. So with Sanatana Goswami, his contribution, his activities, we get a solid philosophical basis of sambandha. And based on that instruction to write literature and to teach people this cult of bhakti, various books were written by Sanatana Goswami. Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is all about the devotee, all about the activities of devotees. Then he wrote a number of other items, three other main works, including the Krishna Lila Stava, then a commentary. And also Hari Bhakti Vilas was written by him, actually. Now, we also understand that Hari Bhakti Vilas was produced by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. But Sanatana Goswami engaged Gopal Bhatta Goswami to actually write and edit this book. Because Gopal Bhatta Goswami was from a strong caste Brahmin lineage. So it would be taken a lot more seriously. And he would be able to explain it to that particular group of persons. So he wrote, Sanatana Goswami essentially wrote these principles by which one conducts themselves. And this was then later edited, expanded by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Now some of those edits aren't always entirely accepted in our line as being fully complete, even though he's a great Goswami. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj has mentioned that some of the items, some of the developments within that book, they have the strong smarta mentality. Now, Krishna is thoroughly proven through the use of smartha techniques. But still, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj considers it somewhat less complete in some way than the pure essence of devotional techniques. Now, in Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are so many rules and descriptions and do's and don'ts and this and that, that I think there's various quotes from Srila Prabhupada that you would, if you tried to follow everything in Hari Bhakti Vilas, you would never leave the bathroom, he said. just to become clean in order to engage in the activities of devotional service, you just wouldn't leave the bathroom. So just imagine how much there is. Now, in today's day and age, where cleanliness is not very well practiced, or certainly not practiced to the extent that it was in the past by very qualified, exalted, powerful brahmanas, so there's the minimal given to us, the minimal basics that we need to survive, the minimal techniques of standard bathing, washing, adorning with tilak. This is essentially what we need to focus on in order to be a devotee, clean devotional dress. But there are so many details, so many descriptions given in this Hari Bhakti Vilas. And it is written for that purpose, to try to bring others to worshipping Krishna, with Krishna as the focus. And that is a main contribution. It's a very important contribution. Sanatana Goswami would love to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so one of his compositions, the Krishna Lila Stava, is a sort of description or discussion in beautiful poetry of the 10th canto pastimes, where he glorifies the Bhagavatam as being dear to him, being non-different to Krishna, being Krishna himself in every word, in every syllable, compared to a jewel. And this is the mood of the Goswamis. They accepted this literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, as the essence of their guidance in life. And Lord Chaitanya taught them to bring this out. So certain books were written by Sanatana Goswami. Certain other books were written by Rupa Goswami, especially, as we know, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Instruction, Nectar of Devotion, and lots of others. He's a prolific writer, both of them. They wrote many, many things. And so their contribution to our lives is exceptional. Now, Sanatana Goswami also had a special type of preaching, which might be instructive for us. Especially in Vrindavan, he was very famous. And we know that the Goswamis are described as dhira, dhira, janapriya. That they are dear both to the sober individuals and also to the not-so-sober individuals. Maybe you might meet some of them if you go on the Saturday night Harinam. The sober ones and then the not-so-sober ones. And Sanatana Goswami and the Rupa Goswami, all the Goswamis were dear to all of the pleasant people and the ruffians as well, because they were non-envious. They had nothing that they wanted to take from anyone. They were pure devotees, simply engaged in Krishna, so no one would see them as a challenge. Undoubtedly, there are always going to be one or two individuals who are entirely inimical. But what's instructive is that Sanatana Goswami, in his initial approach to Lord Chaitanya, considered himself even lower and more fallen than Jagai and Madai. He had heard of the pastimes of Jagai and Madai, how they were delivered by Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. And he said, even these two brothers are more exalted than I am. I am so fallen that I have been unable to accept your mercy. And he genuinely meant it. So Sanatana Goswami displays through his example this first principle of complete surrender regardless of our status, position, or acquisitions and importance in life. He explains just how important it is to come to Krishna with the correct humility. Then through his preaching, he also demonstrated how to behave with others. So through his conduct, he was pleasing to all. And especially in Vrindavan, he would go from door to door, as the Goswamis were prone to madhukari. This was the choice they made. Even though Sanatana Goswami was offered meals at this place, the Maharashtrian Brahmin had invited him to take meals with him. Sanatana Goswami said, no, I'm going to practice madhukari. This is the life of a mendicant. And he did that, and he would interact with the householders. Unlike Shukadev Goswami, who would stay at the house of a householder long enough only for the cow to be milked. He would take his milk and then go off. Didn't want anything to do with household life. Sanatana Goswami would chat to everyone. He would discuss their problems. Husbands and wives would come to him and present to him the latest quarrel they've had. And he would sometimes give them advice, what to do, how to go about this, how to deal with this difficulty. So many practical, simple things that are the issues that face people. Sanatana Goswami would help them through based on his spiritual purity. And so we see actually different individuals have done this. Some people like to keep aloof. Others sometimes at the cost of their own sanity or at the cost of their own sadhana sometimes also do this. Now the Goswamis are, their sadhana was somewhat exceptional. It's described, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa also would sleep for 1.5 hours maximum every day under some tree or some bush. Now I don't know anyone who can mimic that, but that's quite exceptional. That's the state of their penance and austerity. But still there are others, other devotees who will go out of their way to maybe spend all night chatting to someone to bring them to Krishna somehow. One of the greatest examples of this is our dear Shruti Dhamma Prabhu. Of course, that for years, 20, 30 years, he would be visiting person A, person B, all around London, up and down the country, trying to bring them to Krishna, chatting all sorts of things, finding out about the person, making friends with them. And then you see the result later. Sometimes it takes 20 years for someone to start chanting. So there are many, many different avenues, different approaches in spiritual life that we need to take. And when someone gives time to someone to help them go forward in their spiritual life, that person naturally feels a great affection, a great gratitude, and they also feel that they have great debt to the preachers. Now, preachers shouldn't do that as a means of acquiring that status. That's not at all Sanatana Goswami's behavior. He didn't want any name, fame, distinction or anything. But he did that simply to help everyone. And so, in Vrindavan especially, on this day which is Guru Purnima, in Vrindavan there is a great celebration which is done specifically to honor Sanatana Goswami. Now, Guru Purnima, as Prabhupada explains, he didn't really encourage devotees to follow it too much or do too much. Because it's actually an event which is mainly honored and recognized by the Mayavadis. The various Mayavadi groups make a big song and dance once a year to honor the Guru, or to honor all Gurus. That's the actual purpose of the day, the Guru Purnima. But in our Gaudiya tradition, it doesn't really happen. Prabhupada explained that in the Gaudiya tradition, Vyasa Puja is the day that we honor the Guru. And specifically in his case, he said, the day after Janmashtami is the day when disciples will honor me. But Srila Prabhupada also said that actually we celebrate Guru Purnima every day through the morning Guru Puja. And that is our way. Even in the Gaudiya Math, it's not actually a daily occurrence that this Guru Puja takes place. In some parts. But Prabhupada established it. It's very interesting setup. That he wanted every day that the Guru is glorified as a priority. We of course do that during Mangalarti. But then of course specifically through Guru Puja, we glorify the Guru. And this is because this is almost one of the fundamentally prioritized instructions of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. Find a guru, surrender to them, learn the science of devotion from them. That is the starting point of the teachings, the essence of the teachings. So Prabhupada wanted it established in this way. So this Guru Purnima occasion which is done, it was celebrated and some disciples celebrated it in different ways. So Prabhupada was happy. He said, how did you celebrate in one case? He said, we did kirtan all night. Prabhupada was happy with that. So it's nice to honor this occasion, but our prime occasion does remain Vyasa Puja. So we are supposed to really focus on that. Now, of course, there is probably a good time to remind everyone to write their offerings for Vyasa Puja, to express our gratitude to Srila Prabhupada. Deadline is 21st of July, I believe. But it is something very important that when we feel gratitude to what we have received from the exalted sages, the saints, the Vaishnavas, we write something to thank them, express our gratitude. And this is the real authentic and heartfelt way to worship to conduct the Guru Purnima ceremony. So Sanatana Goswami especially was so affectionately received by everyone that they worship him specifically, which is a rare thing. So many people in all the villages, in all the towns, had such affection for this individual. So we can take that as a great guidance. So I touched on some of these aspects of Sanatana Goswami. We haven't done a full biography of him. There is so much more that he has done, so many more things that we could have said. But really I wanted to touch on this instructional, philosophical aspect and his philosophical contribution, which starts from this principle of correct inquiry. Starting from, who am I? What am I doing? Why am I suffering? So that is the basis of our preaching also. Prabhupada said, you're an intelligent person, why are you suffering? So that's how we preach. So I'll stop there. I'll ask if there are any questions, comments.